the show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. It's jumpy out there, as a friend said. The energy's so strong to step off it is to run right into it. So we're here, stepping into the traveling now. I will be doing something for the Praxis Peace Community on Friday at 4 p.m. You can find out about that at coyotenetworknews.com. And I'm also about to launch a Shift Becoming Agents of Liberating Trickster course. You can find out about that at coyotenetworknews.com. And, you know, navigating these different venues, right, are challenging. But I did do a really great, if I do say so, video. No brag, just fact. And that's free, and I'm happy to send it to anybody who sends us their email. It's really completely worthwhile. So here we are, the confluencing of allies. So it is the full moon. It is the full moon. It's the reverence for life magnetized into incarnational actuality full moon. We might be welcoming Jesse Wolf Hardin, founder of Good Medicine Confluence, which is a great event that we will telepathically tout no matter what, August 7th, 17th through 20th at the Ghost Ranch in New Mexico. And longtime ally and presenter at the conference, Sean Patrick O'Donohue. And I love the website, you know, goodmedicineconfluence.com. So no matter where we are or what we're doing, it is an excellent time for the confluencing of all allies. And on the website, it says your storied mission, healing and beautifying our lives and our world in these harrowing, good word, times might seem like a fairy tale, but it's a tale we can embrace, embody, and help right now to make come true by adding to our knowledge, learning crucial skills, creating alliances with kindred healers, and living our most beloved wishes and dreams. Designed to aid you in this quest, the 17th Annual Good Medicine Confluence, an opportunity to explore new approaches as well as ancient traditions, to dance to tribal beats, network with newfound friends, and deepen your personal connection to the healing herbs, the teacher mushrooms, and inspired nature herself. So welcome, Sean, and you can
thank you.
You can channel our ally Wolf.
I am attempting to send him the link right now to join us.
It's all improv, everybody. That's really great. So, you know, I'd said to you backstage, when in panic, invite Pan in. I will toss that back to you, but I want to bring up my favorite full moon honoring from Dionne Fortune and her splendid, very trippy novel, Moon Magic. And it's useful for all of us now. The full moon exact was just minutes ago. Ooh. So tonight, so in that novel, the character Morgan Le Fay Morgan, she's setting her altar for the full moon, as we can do tonight, and she takes a humble vase of flowers and dedicates it as an invitation for Isis, goddess of the earth, to come on back in. And she steps outside, and she's just besieged by things aren't going right. You know, it's very now. It's right. You know, Venus and Mars square each other. You know, so it's like so she's besieged by that, going, that's not right, and the guy's not right, and the thing. And she steps back inside. And she sees the full moon shining through the window, illuminating the humble vase of flowers that she dedicated, Saturn, as an invitation, Venus. And she feels this incredible downrush, like, poof! And she goes, it doesn't matter what I was worried about or what I was frightened about or whatever. The humble vase of flowers dedicated as an invitation had clearly been accepted. And in the language of the adepts, I was back on my contacts. So I always get goosebumps even when I'm saying that. And I love the occult British antique phrase, back on one's contacts. And we were talking about this last night, Sean. It's like, I don't know that synchronicity increases. I think our availability to synchronicity increases. Is that a fun thing for you to play with?
It is. And, you know, I think about this connects so much with the plants, because one of the first things people tell you as an herbalist is, oh, the medicine that you need will find you. Mm. It's not that that's untrue, but that makes it all about us. And what I find actually happens is when you go out with the intention to be reshaped to suit the forest or the field or the desert where you're wandering, then the land will recognize you, and the plants who notice what's a little bit out of balance will start showing up.
Ah. Oh, there's our ally, Jesse Wolf Harden. Welcome, Jesse Wolf Harden. Can you hear us? Apparently not. We can see him. Oh, yes, yes. Maybe turn off your video so we can hear you better. Keep your audio.
I can't hear you.
Oh, Well, we're calling for help. We're calling for help. Trickster, help, come in. Right? Great backstage ally. Kirsten Thomas, can you guide Jesse to being able to hear us? There we go. So he can just, he can't hear us asking him to telepath. We'll see. But no matter what, he's welcome, because as I said to you backstage, Sean, Dark Moon Lilith is at 11 plus Scorpio, whose image is the Renaissance Council. And it's not the snooty thing. It's the convening of allies, you know, in their dedicated craft. It's part of everything that we're doing, right? It's part of the praxis thing I'm about to do. It's part of the becoming agents of liberating trickster shift. It's here right now. It's here right now for all of us to gather our wits, you know, and step into the traveling now where we can have solace. And we're seeing if somebody can assist Jesse Wolf Harden into audio capacity to participate. We'll see, but we're... When in panic, invite in Pan. And let me just put forth, we're really in it now. Pluto, the dance of the outer planets, Pluto, Neptune, and Uranus, they're all dancing. These are huge deconditioning intelligences of nature. So we're in this huge deconditioning thing. And it behooves all of us to animate the desirable profferings being offered to us, lest we leave it by default to the Dementors, right? So Pluto is stationing retrograde at 2 Aquarius, whose image is a deserter from the military following their own conscience, following their own wilderness path. And that's something we want to waft out into the world, you know, for everybody, the way we've got as a blessing. May all follow their conscience. May all desert any constraining orthodoxy that is not dedicated to community well-being. And we go, all right. So Pluto is in a 60 degree angle to Saturn and Neptune. Neptune's stationing, so we're in a fairy tale world here. And it's, again, our dedication to the desirable vision. Steady. We're here helping all of us, reciprocal mutual aid, here we go. To be steady in our dedication to desirable outcome. And then Saturn and Neptune sextile Uranus trines back to Pluto. I don't know that I've seen this before, but it is a huge, we're in it now, here we go. It is everything into the cauldron, and what shall we ladle out? And I like my colleague Evangeline saying, the opportunity proffered to us to redream the world, emerge from ashes to dream anew, the work of democracy to envision the alternative. So that's really there. And as I'd said to you, and let's to and fro it back and forth, I learned from, I'm always learning from David Graeber, that our word freedom comes from a Norse word, Frey, which means friend or beloved friend. So freedom is friendship. And our word civilization comes from civilis, which is dedicated citizens, not monuments, not whatever, but our dedication to collective well-being. There we go. So what shall we ladle out of the cauldron? I'll throw it to you all, and Jesse still can't hear us.
He can now, I believe.
Ah, can you hear us now?
Yes, do you hear me?
Yes, it's a miracle. We can just pack up our bags and go now. But welcome, Jesse Wolf Harden. We're touting your wonderful work and your wonderful conference and the confluencing of allies. May it happen all over the place. But I was just saying, let me say it again. Mars in the sky is at 13 Virgo, which is the lineage of all healing wizardesses, practitioners. And it sextiles Dark Moon Lilith. Oh, there you are. You might want to turn off your video just so we have a just have an audio thing, just because it, in case it cuts out. I don't know, whatever amuses you most, whatever you want to do. but to both of you, and to everybody, you know, what shall we ladle out of the cauldron? Any dedicated visions? Anything that you'd like us all to animate, all of our fabulous listening citizens?
Well, it strikes me that one of the old names for this full moon that we are in right now is the Mead Moon. And I think about, in both the Irish and the Norse traditions, the Mead Cup being the cup of sovereignty. Mm. And so drinking in that true sovereignty that arises from our being wedded to the land and stepping forward into who we are, dreamed into who we are by the living world and by each other.
Yes. and I love, you know, Dionne Fortune always dusting off her workbook because she was hired by the British government in World War II to organize all the ritualists of Britain to do ritual to harm no one but to protect Britain from the Nazi invasion. And that's a whole deep thing that I go into over and over again in different conferences, and the shifting. But she said it was essential for our work that we maintain an atmosphere of tranquility in our home workspaces. Otherwise, how could we have hoped to have been a nucleus of stability for the nation's soul? And you chimed in going, upgrade Earth, shall we make it the Earth soul, right?
Right. Well, that it's not the nation, but the land that we need to be attuned with. And of course, thinking about, Jesse, the voices of your beloved canyon that you listen to and channel so deeply.
Yeah. Anything that the canyon wants to say to us through you?
No doubt. More than I can be eloquent about it, I'm sure. But it's what I'm finding is an increasing amount of noise and an increasing amount of tragedy, stress, anxiety, fear. Mm. Close friends of ours have recently killed themselves. Several others have told me that they wonder if it's good to go on. So I think we're in an unprecedented time in which alignment has to be in alignment with our souls, our spirits, the living earth, and with some greater purpose, not in order to be more aligned with society as it exists now, but rather to set aside an alternative vision, a redreaming, as you say, that allows us to step into a new reality once this old paradigm collapses, which it most certainly is on the brink of doing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well said. Yeah, everything into the cauldron, and what shall we ladle out, you know, that, and we go, vroom. And again, how to maintain, yeah, when you say, I mean, your friends who've killed themselves, and then I have great allies hovering on the edge right now, and it's like, whoo. And we wish them, and even yours who have departed, you know, we wish them, you know, loving woof, whatever they want to do with it, stay or go, we prefer you to stay. Right, so I'm thinking of just several wonderful, wonderful humans. We go, whoo. So it is this liminal time. And just as you say, Jesse, you know, how shall we gather our wits and our mutual aid? You know, again, that this emerge from this cauldron and keep each other safe, right? Keep each other safe. Yeah. So, yeah.
The difference, there's the overlap between a terrible transitional time, incredible trauma and stress. I mean, the flip side of that is those are the times of opportunity. There's not great spiritual advancement when everything is placated, bought off, everybody's obedient, when there's no questioning of the dominant paradigm. Spirituality comes into play over and over again when there's natural or political or combination of stressor events that really present to us an opportunity. That they show us the need for and the urgency of becoming our true magical selves and doing something with it.
Yeah. No, that's just right.
Yeah. And, you know, it became clear to me this year that the only way, that there is no way out, there's only the way through. And, you know, dancing at the edges of life and death myself with heart surgery this spring, there were the moments that I thought, well, maybe it'd be easier to be a ghost. And I talked with the ghosts and they said, no, we just watch what you're doing and try to say things to you and you don't listen. You don't want to be a ghost. And then I went and I thought, well, maybe I'll be an oak or a bear. And then the oaks and the bears said, well, you know, what you humans are doing is making our world a lot more difficult. And there's not much we can do about it other than speak to you. And I thought, maybe I'll go dream under the mound again in the ancient with the ancient ones who left the world. And the other world said, well, we can feel your drilling and the echoes of your bombs all the way down here. And we can't do anything about it except call to you. So we all need you to stay there. And it's a lot, and as hard as it is for you there, it's a lot easier for you there where you can do something.
Well, Sean, things are doing quite well in the spirit world without our active intervention. It's right here on this physical plane in this current time when we're called. I mean, now is when we're most needed. Now is when we can make the play. And I mean, the stage is right here. We have spirit to be a part of and to be one with and interact with and follow the will of forever. But what we have is this very brief, finite opportunity in our bodies to totally embody not only our feelings, our emotions, you know, all of our intuition, but rather, you know, to embody a purpose. And it's like this is the moment. And how difficult it is in this world right today is a parallel really to your physical difficulties with your heart attack, because really we're talking about a stressor moment in which we can come through brighter and more purposed than ever. You know, just last week, my son, whom you know is 7 years old, Wilson has been bugging and bugging to go up to this very special place here in this canyon. And that's the place I call the Cave of the Red Wolf Mother, because of some of the slightly indiscernible, but what looks to be a teated Red Wolf Mother painted on the inside wall. Now, nobody had been in this cave when I moved here for over 1,000 years, because that's when the ancient Mogollon people of the Southwest first ventured out of these hills. For whatever reasons, we're not entirely sure. People are still arguing about it. But over 1,000 years ago is when this cave was left in the state that it's in. I found it at a very special moment, and he wanted to find the place of that. And what it was, I was doubting, as so many people are right now, is what is our purpose as humans on this planet? You know, wouldn't we be better off just as spirits flying through the air? Are we better off just as some kind of celestial galaxy of possibilities? Or is there something right now that we're meant to do, some path we're meant to walk? So I literally was wondering, as I was walking up this mountainside just to get a view of the river, of the blossoming trees and plants as spring came into play. And the further I got up, the more pottery sherds I was finding. And they weren't just the normal reddish-brown ones. They were the painted, meaning ritualized pots. So it's pieces of white with beautiful black geometrics painted on it. And I'm getting closer and closer to what I now know was this cave, but was not yet visible. Even 30 feet below it, I couldn't see it. And I was getting these massive tingles, and I'm going, you know, to what degree am I intuiting or imagining what's happening here? And I looked to my feet, and just as I was going through this deep, deep fear about, you know, can I feel my destiny? Am I of any use to this planet, let alone universe? Can I possibly walk in the steps of these ancient ones who walked in such a sacred and magical way? And there, right there at my feet, underneath a rock overhang, was a sandal sole. Sandal sole woven out of yucca fibers, you know, well over 1,000 years ago. And I held that up to my foot, and for a moment I remember that silly, you know, Western European saying about if the shoe fits, wear it. And I'm thinking, damn, it's a perfect fit. I mean, how can I even pretend I'm inconsequential when I'm being told again and again that it's each of our lives and our dreams that's going to make the new world possible?
That's adorable and true. And it's also, as you greet the sandal, you're going, I was wondering where I left you. Right. Anyway, so that's super great. And then, you know, all of us to rise to the occasion. And we want to gather people we admire who are doing that. And I keep going for Letitia James. We played her speech some weeks ago. It was so rousing. She's giving Pluto transits. That's the way. Because what we're all saying, Pluto requires a mission. And Letitia James, mm-hmm. you know, she takes us all the way down to the horrible, the act four where we are, you know, as we've all been referencing, like, and feeling like, whoa. And then she comes up at the end and she goes, I was trained by adversity. You know, I've been, you know, honed by this. I grew up in Brooklyn. I am ready. I'm full of mission. I'm prepared for this. I have a fellowship. Let's talk about that, Jesse. I have a fellowship, and we're coming for you, tyranny. And it's just very Dark Moon Lilith, woofy, like a mission. And then just one thing I want to toss back to you both, you know, when you go, what is the purpose of humans? We're aside from our rudeness and everything. And I've been working for a while with this, which is it might be that part of what is a unique opportunity responsibility to us humans is to borrow qualities of intelligence from the flora fauna with whom we share this planet, you know, this quality from this mushroom or this plant or wolf.
Absolutely. You hit that on the nail head, and that's why artificial intelligence is as frightening as it is. That's the one thing it's incapable of, because it's drawing from a set of information that's human fed. It's not drawing directly from the spirit. It's certainly not drawing from the natural world. It has no reference point. That's not a data bank that it can milk and filter from. And so, you know, this is where we can hear the truths that aren't just various dogmas, various platforms, you know, constantly fed back to us through algorithms. We step outside of that and get out barefoot on the planet and touch a plant and hold it up to our face and smell it and taste it and behold the sun as it rises up. That is a direct messaging, a direct reawakening, a catalyzing of us that's absolutely essential now, and that can wake each of us up to this purpose that you're talking about.
Yeah, it's really important, because Sean was bringing up in conversation, and my great ally Aaron was bringing up the AI useful for some things. You know, a friend of mine with a medical nonprofit has it, you know, explain diagnoses to patients, you know, but they're both, you know, and all of us really are going, but the lack of intimacy, the devastation of the forests and the water supply that is required for this thing. You know, and I like to put Sir Herbert Reed on the altar, who said, only those serving an apprenticeship to nature can be trusted with technology. We go, yeah.
Excellent. Well said, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is well said. We want to put that there. Right. And because, Sean, you were saying that the AI in Ireland having all these tech benefits, right? You said it's destroying the holy wells of Ireland.
Right. Well, it threatens to. So for, you know, the past many years of ostensible independence, governments in Ireland have sold the country off in many ways, just like governments in so many places
everywhere.
Do, by giving these tax benefits to big tech to move there. And one of the results is that a lot of the data centers that drive the internet exist in Ireland. And I learned about this from the wonderful podcaster Blind Boy, who has some fascinating takes on things. And he was talking about the amount of water it takes to cool these data centers,
right,
and how it's drawing from the aquifers. And when, as we transition to AI, that's going to increase tenfold. And so all of the holy wells are part of that underwater water table. And deeply enough, if you go all the way down, they're part of the well in the other world, where the rivers of water and the rivers of stars have their source. But closer to the surface, they're drawing from those waters beneath the stone and those waters beneath the earth. And, you know, one of the most important things that Irish tradition teaches is you don't dishonor the holy wells. If you treat the wells with dishonor, they dry up. It used to be that that was somebody did their laundry in the holy well, and the well dried up overnight and appeared in the next parish. But if you're going after the whole water supply, the whole aquifer, then the well's not going to have somewhere else to come up. And we do these things at great peril. You don't mess with the other world in these bumbling and violent ways without some consequence.
Yes. And one of the things that's being given to all of us, you know, going so generously, right? I'll say it and translate it. So Uranus, trickster genius in nature, just entered Gemini. So it's crucial that we keep a cool head, as the Yoruba who gave us the word cool reminded us that it's also temperature. To imagine our heads as cool allows us to, you know, deal with enhanced superconductivity of multiple ideas at once without frying our circuits, meaning, you know, it's also kind of, you know, it's like ingenuity is available. So Uranus, sometimes called the higher octave of Mercury, although I'm in favor of throwing higher and lower out, but it's in cahoots with Mercury in a quintile. And it says, you know, liberating genius and technology in accord with the earth is available, humans. It's available. You know, and irresistible eloquence for all of us on behalf of what we love and what we are in nature available. You know, raise your hand if you'd like liberating eloquence on behalf of what you love, and to be an agent of non-harmful ingenuity, ingenuity that is good for everyone, right? So that's strongly available here. And let me just remind our team of dedicated citizen listeners, and we want to ladle out, you know, a free civilization of dedicated citizens full of mutual aid and kindness and friendship, that we are speaking with our wonderful ally, Jesse Wolf Hardin, founder of the Good Medicine Confluence. We'll talk more about that on the other side of the break. August 17th through 20th, Ghost Ranch, New Mexico. And also telepathically everywhere, and our longtime ally, Sean Patrick O'Donohue, so wonderful. There's much for all of us to put on our altar of desirable mystery, and, you know, cooperators are standing by. Let's meet them, right? And if we don't know what to do, invite in what does. So we're about to have a break, and just an audio break, but everybody hang in. Because it's perfect, it resonates with Pluto. Again, let me repeat, Pluto's image is a deserter from the military following their conscience through their own wilderness path. And we go, yes, we want this to be a blessing. And we'll come back to you on the other side of the break, Wolf, about, you know, heretics and misfits and all these parts of us that are, come on out now, we love you. So, deserter from the military. And so we have... you know, for our break, that we might start a smidge early because it's wonderful. It's the first time Charlie Chaplin spoke on film, and it's The Little Dictator. And it's an evergreen, but it's so worthwhile now. You'll hear him exhort to all of us, and we want to spiral this out into everyone's hearts, that people desert from military, from all that is cruel and churlish and all parts of human, of our rogue species that have been terrible from the get-go, they're all here now, right? The churlish cruelty and everything in one convenient package, so we could go into the cauldron. There we go. So, and Charlie Chaplin does a great, well, you've probably heard it. It bears repeating. It's very humming now. So let's welcome Charlie Chaplin in The Little Dictator, and it's his great soliloquy to the military. Here we go.
Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent. And all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world. Millions of despairing men, women, and little children. Victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate. Only the unloved hate, the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world, a decent world, that will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
Oh, that's so moving. It's so now. It's so everything. Isn't that great, Jesse and Sean? Do you love this?
It could have been said right now and be just as prescient.
It is. It's said right now. That's the voice. That's the voice of Pluto and Uranus and Neptune to all of us. You know, the love of humanity lives in all of our hearts. You know, liberty. You know, not in one man. You know, but in all humans, in all beings. You know, that's right. You know, and an old age of security. You know, do away with national boundaries. Oh yes. Anyway, so every single line of that, you know, again, prescient, powerful, it's kindness and gentleness, right? All of those qualities that, you know, are intrinsic to, in the wonderful word, husbandry, right? The positive yang, husbandry, strong enough to be gentle, right? And that's part of, you know, both of you great wizard allies, you know, you're both strong enough to be gentle, right? And Jesse, Sean said you also live not only near the fabulous cave with the sandal that was waiting for you, right? But you also have many snakes in your neighborhood, right?
Yes, indeed.
Just because the image, images for each degree of the zodiac for Ceres, Demeter, dwarf planet, goddess of the earth, is a person weaving a magical basket out of serpents. And it's like, ooh, it's an arresting image, right? And it's like, well, we're just going to hand that to you to put on your sandal and put in your basket, Jesse, going, what would it mean to weave a magical basket out of serpents? It's an arresting image. We don't need to impose certainty on it, but it's like, ooh. But you're a friend of snakes. Sean said you live near rattlesnakes and all and have a neighborly accord, right?
Well, yeah, beyond neighborly, I'm sure we're sharing a place and we're cognizant of each other. So we're very much part of a tribe down here rather than opponents. I think that as terminology, they were probably speaking to the inherent danger of serpents, which, of course, all things have some inherent danger to them, depending on how they're treated. But in such case, to take that which we're afraid of, perhaps, whether it's justifiably or not, we take the things which are mysteries, which cannot be completely known, which could bite us back if we don't take good care of them. You know, if we take those things and weave our magic out of that, I mean, that's what needs transforming. That's what needs to be changed from a perceived threat into a vessel possibility.
Right. Yes, to make art out of it, and respect for all beings. And we have many, many, many things being proffered to us all. But the gathering, which some may be able to attend, and some just telepathically, we want to waft to them. But many great medicine people that you're confluencing. This is your 17th conference, right? Right, Wolf Hardin.
Yes. Yep.
Jesse Wolf Hardin.
So
But yeah.
it's a 16th confluence, but it's been 17 years because we had to miss 1 year due to COVID.
And it is, it is the gathering. Let me bring up and toss it back to you and to Sean. But yes, this is the time, for all that's been, that all that is worthy but has been repressed to rise up in us and in the world. And I never tire of saying that the word heretic was a term of praise, even in early Judeo-Christian, because it meant cross-pollinating, contributor to culture, so that knowledge would never degrade into dogma or superstition. So welcome heretics, right? Again, people who draw from many things, from many places, from many plants, no one story, many stories, all making up one. And you have an affection and a convening of, heroic, all of us heroic befoibled misfits, right? Isn't that part of your love, Jesse Wolf Hardin?
Exactly, very well said. So, recognizing that what's most beautiful is what fits in least. At this particular time, is that which fits into the natural world, to the endless tapestry, from the entire cosmos down to the smallest molecular structure. That all these things are similar in a way. They're music that goes together on the same set list. And it's only possible that humans, and I mean civilized humans, denatured humans, are able to do anything outside of that symphony. And so it's all about the misfits finding in their individuality, a cause to live for and a tribe to do it with.
Perfect. Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely. And see, part of the perfection of your dedication, and Sean's and my aspiring one, is what the planetary dance says. Pluto in Aquarius. Aquarius is the realm of community. So it's going to be there for the next 20 years. But as it in the early time now, it dredges up everything within us too that we're tired of, our old patterns to throw into the cauldron. But it says, oh humans, let us learn the distinction between a cult and a community. Cult is the toxic mimic of community, where people outsource their authority to someone else. Community, which is your art form, your dedication, and right now it says it's got this beautiful harmonious cahooting with Saturn and Neptune and Aries. Aries, the unique individual. This is a community, like at your gathering, that welcomes rather than suppresses the unique contribution of everyone. Going, everybody, who brought what? Your unique contribution, welcome, and that to have a positive cauldron in which everyone's ingenuity can get catalyzed. Some better word, maybe. But yeah. So it's very. You, the you part of all of us, Jesse Wolf Hardin, going right, the unique thing. We don't have to suppress it. And part of what I find so magnetizing about your conferencing is I quip to myself. I can be lonely on my own, but it takes a group in which to be alienated. But what you're convening, is a community, which is really mutual aid. It's an intelligence arising from the group, right?
Yes, it's an organic alliance, the same way that the plants are sending out roots and connecting and then gathering information and serving each other and exchanging nutrients. It's that the medicine confluence began as what we thought was an herbal natural healing event, which of course people back then they didn't have near enough information or even inspiration to go to natural means for taking care of themselves, and everybody was greatly suffering under pharmaceuticals. There were only a few herbal conferences in existence, but very quickly we found out that what we were serving was not just natural healing, but the healing of nature, the healing of our own personal inner natures, the healing of our society, of our relationship to other human beings and to the natural world and all the plants and animals around us. So the healing was so much bigger. So that's why alchemists were being drawn to us, not just clinical, you know, plant medicine practitioners, you know, poets, artisans, basket makers. You know, we have a class about clay, the spiritual significance of handling and fashioning crafts from clay into making your vessels from clay. Ooh. And the thousands of years of that reconnecting us to the earth, not just as a practical exercise, but as a spiritual exercise, a spiritual meditation. So it's all these people coming together, what that appear to be coming from entirely different places. And yet they are telling us over and over again that for the first time, they're finding their tribe, mm-hmm. not amongst people that think exactly like they do, but people that care as much as they do. Not necessarily people that are doing what they are doing, but people that are also acting on their passions, acting for a higher purpose. And so they see in each other's eyes, wow, I'm not alone. And so they're coming from all over the United States just to vibe with that. We're not alone. We're doing this together.
That's so great. And one of the things I say often, and I never tire of saying it, so I'll say it again. Our word vessel in all languages means container and boat. And so I love that. You know, and as you talk about people working with clay, making a vessel, and then putting one's dedication into that clay vessel. And then you get to get in it as a boat and set forth right at the end of the conference or the end of the show or the end of the whatever. We craft, and the word craft also is power from dedication, and also it's a boat. I love that. So we're all crafting our vessels, you know, and with clay at the at the goodmedicineconfluence.com. And I wanted to just do a shout out. One of my favorite humans in the world, hello Maureen, is near you, and I did call her up to notify her of this because she's a neighbor, a wonderful neighbor, and we were looking at your website, and she was like, oh, the graphics are beautiful. They are. Right, there's no AI anywhere in your website. It's such a relief, right? No language was AI, no graphics. It's like it's really beautiful, and that's a rare thing. That's a rare thing. Jesse Wolf Harden and the goodmedicineconfluence.com. Mm-hmm. So just go feast your kinship eyes on how beautifully crafted, you know, the site is, which is wonderful. Yeah, and Sean and I have been talking, well, it's an ongoing conversation about how AI has some purposes, but then again, it destroys the earth. But we can feel when language is AI, right? I'm just emerging from shift. I hope they're not listening. But I'm smuggling good things into the thing, right? But I can see that they're, don't be deterred by the marketing language. There we go. No, it doesn't sound like me. Never mind that. I'm on the other side of it. You can find me. That's right. Again, coyotenetworknews.com. But it is like a smooth gray thing. It's like, you know, and when I read like my words AI'd, I go, I can't even remember who I am. I can't even remember what I do. It's a powerful kind of narcotic in a way. It's like, whoa, every now and then I see one of my phrases kind of flown up to the top like flotsam and jetsam, and then back into this smooth, you know, kind of nonsense thing. Anyway, so there we go. I hope Shift isn't listening. I love you, of course. There you go, Shift. In case you're listening. But yeah, and so your graphics and your language are all intimate, and that's part of your wonderfulness, Sean, and your prolific works and your books, and you're working on another book. It's very, very impressive. So yeah, because it's really the antithesis of the bardic tradition, right?
Right. Well, and you know, in the bardic tradition, the old Irish word for poet was synonymous with the name with the word for prophet, because they were both simply about being engaged with the truth. And the way you engage with the truth was you apprenticed for 18 years to the trees. Oh. And you also immersed yourself in the music and the cadence of the words the ancestors had spoken before you, so that then you would go out on behalf of your people during a time of great need and wander in the forest and perhaps eat strange mushrooms and perhaps immerse yourself in waters, perhaps go into a cave, perhaps gaze at the clouds, and perceive the patterns that were at play in the world. And then seeing those patterns, you would learn how to weave that into language and come back and speak it in a way that would convey not only the information, but the felt sense of what was happening, so that everybody in the tribe could be woven together in the understanding of what was alive in the world. Mm. And if you understood it well enough, you could find a place where you might change a single syllable in order to change the path of fate. But you would so rarely do that because you would understand the whole of the music. But in Irish still, the way that you say something is fated is ta sé anann. It is in a poem.
Oh.
Right.
That's very rich. And as Robert Bly, great ancestor, hi Robert, bring in the poets and double the madness. It's like, yes. And then many cultures have many words for madness, and I love in Arabic, majnun. You know, majnun means crazy for the divine, right? That kind of madness, majnun.
Yes.
And Arabic, I wish if I could press a button and know it, or if I could just speak English with an Arabic accent, I'd be happy to, because you can say majnun mabsut. Of course, I'm mad for the divine. Majnun mabsut. Anyway, it's beautiful.
In Irish, it's imbas, which is the fire in the head.
Ooh.
But what's important with the fire is you let the fire heat the cauldron of poetry. And then but the poetry is within the cauldron, so it's heated by the fire, and then you ladle it out, and you get it at just the right temperature, so that it will warm and nourish the people, but it won't scald them unless they need scalding, and then it can be drunk, it can be drunken.
Yes. Well, you know, part of the alchemy, you know, and I want to toss this to both you wizard lads, you know, is Neptune, dreams, vision, imagination. So again, Arabic, so beautiful, has the Alam al-Mithral. It's the realm where images and music are the most real thing. And it's like, that's where we are. That's where we are. And to be able to brew in a group, or even now, right now, during this hour, you know, and then with Sean and Jesse, and we want to get to, you know, some of the people you love who are part of your team there, Professor Prufrock, anyway, we'll come back to that, you know, but to create an atmospheric mist to waft over hot, not good craziness in the world going, whew, and I love this. My mix, my Neptunian mix is, I like the lavender psilocybe mushroom mix to waft over hot spots. And I've had unlikely people, like policemen, go, I'm going to join with you and do that. Wafting out, you know, metaphoric psilocybe lavender mist over hot crossroads or hot places to provide solace and soothing and protection, right? So it's for all of us to practice our intrinsic skills of dreaming the world into being. Yeah. And, you know, and Jesse at Good Medicine Confluence, and really your whole life, isn't it a conjuring where people can, you know, do real things and then imaginary real things to waft forth blessings and goodness into the world? Yeah.
100%. I mean, that's, you talked about the purpose of humankind on this planet.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's hard to compare our value to organic bacteria or to fungus or the wisdom of so many of the creatures that I reference. Yeah. You know, and yet, so we must be imparting something unique. It wasn't just whether we seized the opportunity away from nature. We were given a platform. We were given, and that platform came with an assignment. So as far as I'm concerned, as far as I can see with my heart more than with my eyes, is that we came upon in this form in order to be the ultimate celebrants, the ultimate noticers, feelers, carers, the compassion and the empathy to up that, to be over the top with our empathy, compassion, and artfulness, making things more beautiful deliberately, not just out of our own being and existence like a creature can do, but rather that we will set aside even some of our narrow interests in order to take on this larger role for the earth. So if we are, as I am certain, extensions of, literal extensions of a living planet and perhaps living universe, then that extension, like the fingers on our hands, like our hands on the ends of our arms, each organ having this purpose, and our purpose indeed would be to make things more explicable, more wondrous, more available to everybody, to bring them together around compassion, empathy, caring, and making things an art project, all of existence an art project.
Yeah.
Without that, I'm not sure how we fit in. But we don't have anything to balance out the worst that humankind does, except the beautiful things we make, the beautiful amount that we care, and how much we love.
Hmm. And to be humbled by certainly what many and you both are dedicated to, the incredible intelligence in nature. I had a wonderful guest many years ago, maybe invite her back on, who was writing all about bacteria. And she said, bacteria have already solved all of the problems that humans are facing. They already solved it if you just look at the thing. And I love that. And then you Jesse, are great the way you, and both of you, as you speak, your part of the sky story is lighting up. So you use the word deliberate, again, one of my favorite words. I never tire from saying that the word deliberate comes from Libra, and it comes from two verbs, librare, to liberate, and libare, to balance. So when we're deliberate, we're in a state of liberating balance. And it's like, oh, word magic. we have words. Animals may have words. Animals certainly have rituals. I have seen this. You know, I'm not sure, but you just did a great job. I'm not sure what we humans have that the rest of flora, fauna, fungi doesn't have, except you said our empathy. Maybe that, you know, I want to toss it back to both of you. It's like, do you think we have the capacity to contribute empathy to our fellow kin? Are we especially skilled at that as a species, perhaps? Is that what you're saying, Jesse?
Well, I'm saying that is the mission. Is that, yeah. I believe that most people, except when they've been terribly damaged by trauma, are capable of empathy. As children, sense empathy. So it's a rare child that doesn't have that, like, recoil when they see something hurting, even just a plant that's wilting. You know, they have an emotional, deep-seated response that makes them want to rush over there with water or to tend it or to get somebody else to help. And so for me, that's a human quality that can be grown in most people. So I see that as the seed that could potentially set us apart. So can we insist upon, or in any way, we certainly can't force anybody to care about other people that are different from them. But to start with children, to start with people that are willing to listen to the poem, the poetry that is our activism, to make it so clear to them that this is their opportunity, their chance for growing, for coming out of that seed and become this more beautiful thing. I'll tell you one thing, Carolyn, nature can subsist without humankind.
Mm-hmm.
And amazingly so, consciousness will persist without, in different multitudes of forms, forever evolving and changing and expanding and shrinking back and weaving together. It can exist wonderfully without us, but we cannot exist without nature.
Yeah, there's a great film, Earth Without Humans, and it's beautiful. You know, they just sort of pluck humans off, and then within, you know, hours, there's tendrils coming up buildings and coyotes living on the third floor, you know. But it's our species exit, right, that they skip, right, that is so disastrous. And since Neptune is wafting to all of us and saying, everyone unique and everyone, we're all in this dream together, that altruism is self-interest, because there's no joy, no suffering that we don't all share in some form, right? So altruism is self-interest, I think, is you know. And then when you say that, I go, bonobos, very, very compassionate, very altruistic. Our eyes are getting opened. I mean, you know, whales, right? I also, recent studies going, oh, look, they're taking care of each other. So altruism, Yes, it exists. Well, it's part of the fabric of being.
If we're doing wordplay, there's no damn such thing as altruism. What there is reciprocity, whether it's conscious or just natural and outside of our purveyance.
Okay, I'm going to look up altruism just for fun. So there's no such thing as altruism, you say. We like to and froing, that's right. And say it again, there's no altruism, but there is reciprocity, you said.
Yes, relationship. Where we give, whether we're conscious of it or not, whether a species is conscious or not, it's giving to other species besides itself. It's not just giving to itself. It's things that will serve it in a larger realm, but it may not be aware of it. So, but it is in relationship in which it's giving and receiving, just as we're giving carbon dioxide and taking in oxygen. And it's this constant exchange that is very much reciprocal. But altruistic tends to imply in most people's minds that we're doing something without any benefit to ourselves, and there's always benefit to ourselves, and we don't need that to be the reason. What it is a world of gifting. It's a gifting cycle in which the best that we can be is giving back as much and as beautifully as the world is giving to us.
I think about that in terms of, like, if our purpose is that celebration, is that singing, it doesn't matter ultimately whether or not we're the only beings who have poetry or the only beings who have song, any more than it matters, any more than my poetry is diminished by another person being a poet as well. Rather, it's increased by the reciprocity. When we're singing together, our songs change. And that happens for the whales too. The whales all swim off and they sing their different songs over the course of the year, but then when they gather, the songs come together and weave into a new song they then carry off and improvise on. And so it is.
Well, the nice thing about it is that we as humans have the opportunity to not just unconsciously or naturally, automatically give and be given to. We have the opportunity to make this very intentional, very deliberate, yes, as Carolyn just talked about. And at that point, we're harmonizing. It's our effort. It's our time on the stage, you know?
Yes. No, this is great. This is great. Although I'm going to go research altruism and ladle it out as an okay thing. It just means devotion to the welfare of others. Oh, we're already out. My goodness. All right. So thank you so much, Sean Patrick O'Donohue. So the time flies when you're having a good gathering. GoodMedicineConfluence.com is a beautiful, beautiful website. CoyoteNetworkNews.com is not quite as beautiful, but useful too. Thank you very much, Jesse Wolf Harden and Sean Patrick O'Donohue. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week. And always thank you to wonderful Kirsten Thomas, best board op in the world. Thank you.